Good evening, everyone. This is Gordon, W2TTT. Is there anybody with emergency or party traffic? Alrighty. Well, everybody, this is Gordon, W2TTT, and this is the Bergen Amateur Radio Association Technical Net.
Connected CF6CAH.
The 2-meter repeater of the Chestnut Ridge Radio Club in Alpine, New Jersey. The Bergen Amateur Radio Association Technical Net is run for the express purpose of having a conversation, a dialogue, sharing our God-given gifts with each other about amateur radio, electricity, electronics, computers, telecommunications, the things in our society that kind of depend on those things. It's a lot of stuff. You can talk about a lot of different things. And we hope you will tonight, actually. The way we check into this net is a little different. You may not think you have anything to say or to contribute, but your checking in will actually help us gauge where we should steer the conversation, how we should steer the conversation, and more importantly, we might even call upon you to answer a question or provide your perspective. Don't be shy, but that's a good thing. But we do find that very often the lurkers, as it were, who do check in, end up making very valuable contributions to our net, and we hope you'll be part of it. So, let's begin. We check in with our call sign, our name, and whether of a question, a comment, both, or none of the above. It's pretty much how it works. So, feel free to check in. The way this works is we'll do this by call sign group just to make things a little neater. So with those stations whose call signs begin with Kilo 2, please call K2BAR.
K2BAR. This is K2ZO. No comments or questions at this time.
Okay, Jim, very fine. Even in advance of field day, really? Okay. We'll come back to that. Any other K2s?
Kilo 2, Zulu, Charlie, Dave, no questions, no comments.
Hey, Dave, I have a question for you. I'll tell you what the question is, but you can hold the answer. And that is, what are you doing in the way of QRP for field day? That is my question to you. Alrighty. So, any other Kilo 2s? All other Kilos, any call sign. It's all that's Kilo. Okay, how about Alpha stations?
Alpha Juliet 4, Whiskey Delta. No comments, no questions.
Hi, Rachel. Very good. Alrighty, very fine. Any other alphas? Okie doke. How about whiskeys?
Sounds good on AU. Still?
No comments or questions. Or maybe I will have a comment, yeah. One comment.
Whiskey Charlie, none of the above, over.
All right, easy, everybody. Hold on. Okay, let's see. I have Don with a comment. I have Bill with what, Bill?
None of you, Bob.
Okay, and Jim? Julia Charlie, that is?
32JC, none of the above, over.
Okay, I heard another carrier in there. Was there another whiskey carrier? Okay. Two of you colliding yet again. Okay. Very good. How about any other whiskeys?
W2CH, Ray, none of the above.
No comment.
Okay, Ray, I got that, no comment. And WE2R, Charlie, no comment. Do I have that right, guys?
Yes.
And correct from WE2R.
Okay, very good. Thanks, guys. All right. Any other whiskeys? November.
And that's 2K. Well, we'll throw in a comment.
And 2OEO with one question.
Okay, thank you, Jim, and thank you, Noel. Any other Novembers? We have any stations on the Echo Link? I didn't check in yet. I didn't log on there yet. Any stations with Echo Link? Can I, please come now? Okay. Very fine. Wowie kazowie. So, my first question, self-imposed. Dave, K2 Zulu Charlie, what are you doing for QRP on field day?
K2DAR, this is K2ZC. Really nothing for field day, because I plan on helping them set up and tear down there. I do have some family obligations over the weekend, and when they're not in the way, I'll probably be over there trying to operate at the field day site, so I have no QRP operations set up. I think Don is going to show up at W2JEK at the field day site early and get some field day contact for the points, the extra points they get for a QRP, before the big guns get on the air. And that's about it. I operated a contest last Tuesday, a milliwatt contest. Had to operate less than a watt. That was fun. It's great. I'm using the Flex Radio 1500, which has a maximum of 5 watts out. But you can adjust it down to any power output you want. But I have no plans for field day as far as QRP or for any other operations other than helping out over at the site. K2BAR, this is K2Mystic.
Okay. Very fine. That's pretty interesting. Alrighty. So, we'll get around to it. Well, with this, Don, what are you planning for QRP?
K2BAR, that's 2JEK. Yeah, well, what I'm going to be doing, I have a, right now it's on the desk right here, is a 10-tech QRP rig. It's one of the monobander kits. This one is for 80 meters and has about 3 watts output. And what I've been doing is I am charging the battery with a solar panel. And with that, you get, if you make 5 contacts using natural power, which could be some form of solar power or solar charged battery or windmill or waterfall or whatever, you can get 100 bonus points, plus in this case being CW, it will be 2 points of contact. So you have at least 10 points there. So that's what I'm planning to do. I usually been doing this lately on 80 meters in the afternoons around 4 o'clock. And run about 3 watts output with this 10-tech T-kit radio there. Back to net, W2JK.
Okay, well, that sounds very good. Sounds excellent. All right. Anybody have any comments about all this QRP stuff at field day?
Life's too short for QRP.
I got the Life's Too Short for QRP. What was the other station? Jim, we got that. Life's Too Short for QRP. You stole that line.
N2XEN.
N2XEN, is that right? And your name?
November 2X3, Juliet November. My name is Wesley. Queens, last place. Back to you, sir.
Okay, very good. Welcome aboard. Did you have a question or comment for the net?
Yeah, well, I have a question. I would like to find out what this net is about, if you don't mind to educate me in this area and to explain.
Sure. Okay, so this net is the Bergen Amateur Radio Association technical net. It meets weekly at 9 o'clock on this repeater. Covers Metro New York, Connecticut, all the way out to northeastern Pennsylvania. They're up in a decent location. I know I regularly check in from 60 miles away in the summer, which is kind of neat. 70 miles away. Some people check in from the Jersey Shore, too, which is kind of neat. But basically, our format is for people to come in and let us know whether they have a question or a comment. Comments are usually topics they want to talk about that may not have a specific question, but they'd like to, you know, share something that they've done or are interested in and like to know a bit more about, and that's pretty much what we do. So we take that role, and we don't take the questions, but we take whether or not there's a question or a comment or both from an individual. We also have people who check in who don't have questions or comments. In fact, we encourage people to do that so that we kind of, you know, typical inquiries of those who might be out there who didn't have something they thought they might want to say. So, for instance, tonight we asked Dave a little bit about his QRP and Don about his QRP because both are QRP operators and how that would be interesting on field day or appropriate to field day. And we got some detail out of Dave and more detail out of Don. Does that make sense?
Well, yes, it does. What I would like to find out is, are you going also to deeper subject? Are you covering basically only ham radio operation? By deeper subject, I would say, let's say, circulator, how it works, a magnetic ferrite component inside and role that it serves for circulator, the frequency range and frequency dependency, or why is not applicable to use circulators for a certain frequency. Would that be a question that is out of the area of your technet and to explain?
No, it would not be. I'm not so sure I'd be able to answer it myself, but we might have someone on frequency who could answer that. But I'll tell you what, can I just post your question and then we'll go through the list and get back to your question? Would that be possible?
Anything you want, and to exit.
Excellent. Well, welcome. That's great. Alrighty. So everybody will think about that frequency range of circulators and what affects the their utility and usefulness. And so we'll just post that thought and come back. Alrighty. Any more comments about field day?
That's K20.
Go ahead, Jim.
Okay, well, field day, we are going to be operating at the municipal building there, the OEM, right across from the Bergen Clients Hospital. I guess it's now called the Bergen County Regional Medical Center. And if you're listening, come on by and join us. We'll be there. It's right off of Farview Avenue in Paramus, so you shouldn't have any trouble finding it. Just look for the hospital. And by the way, Gordon, you put me down. I do have a comment about the antenna I just made. Back to you, it's K20.
So I'm going to get Noel's question, Jim's comment, and then we'll go to you and also, let's see, did I get that call sign right? Is it November 2 X-ray Zulu November?
That's November 2 X-ray Juliet November. My name is Wesley.
I'm sorry, Wesley. You know what? I thought you sounded familiar. Okay. Very good. All right. Very good, Wesley. That's funny. All righty. All right. So let's do that in that order. N2 OEL, you had a question. K2BAR.
It's an easy two-part question. A little history. I bought a antenna that's advertised as being small enough to be a beam that can turn it with a TV rotator. And we assembled it last Sunday in the backyard and filled the whole backyard. I thought 8.58-foot rear turning radius. I just didn't realize that there's two of them, both sides, and it filled up the backyard when the guys tried to get around. We had to crawl underneath the antenna to get, because we had set up a barrel. Okay, originally I was going to put it up with a 1-inch black pipe to hold from the roof to the rotator, and then I was going to use a TV mast for the top. And after I realized how big this thing is, the wind resistance, I said, well, I don't know, it's kind of big. So today I went and bought an 1.5-inch black pipe, 5-foot long. The thing is a monster. It's got to weigh 25, 30 pounds. Both black pipes have a coating that appears to be plastic on it. So I'm able to get galvanized. So I'm going to put these black pipes up on the roof, the 1.5-inch at the bottom, and the 1-inch at the top, the top of the rotator, the bottom, you know, top part of the rotator to the antenna. Okay, my question is, they appear to be coated with some kind of plastic. For greatest life, part A of the question is, do I leave this plastic on and just paint over it and call it good enough? Part B of the question is, if I don't want these things to spin around, do I, like, drill a hole in the spot where the, the tightening bolt on the clamp assembly is to keep the thing from spinning? Because I can see this thing spinning around and around. Back to that, that's who I am.
Okay. Your last question first. Yes, I would definitely drive some stainless steel bolts through them. I'd put a couple of them, actually. That's number one. Number two, I've never heard of black pipe having a coating of sorts. I'm wondering, you know, what you're seeing there. Have you been able to, like, pick at it with a knife or something to see what the story is?
Actually, when we assembled the 6-meter antenna, where it kind of, like, slides in a metal sleeve and then there's a plastic part inside, didn't want to fit. And at the very bottom where there was a label, part of it, like, peeled up and it looked like plastic. We had previously washed the black pipes with odorless paint thinner on the theory that it might be cosmoline. Then we washed it with Windex to remove the odorless paint thinner. And then we washed it with distilled water and a little bit of rubbing alcohol to remove the Windex. Hopefully I got it clean. But that plastic or whatever it is still there.
I can't think of what in God's name it would be, because any time I've ever bought black pipe, it was uncoated. Jim, K2ZO, do you know of anything like this?
Okay, this is K2ZO. Yeah, what you have is gas pipe, that's there to protect it. Well, you have to realize that measurements are different. Plumbers talk about ID. Hams talk about OD. So if you get an 1.5-inch pipe from a plumber, he means the inside diameter is 1.5-inch. The outside diameter depends on the schedule. So you have to be careful that way. That's awful heavy stuff. Too bad you couldn't have found some aluminum. But leave it alone. The pipe is fine. It's coated. It's protected. It'll work. It's just going to be awfully heavy. But yes, do pin it. I pin every antenna I put on a rotator. And I pin the antenna to the mast, drill right through it, put a threaded rod, and I do the same thing where it goes into the rotator.
Quick question, Jim.
Yes.
Or should I just comment? The outer diameter of schedule 40 is 1.9 inches. Or thereabouts. It's just under 2. I know this because I have speed rail clamps that cheerfully fit in there. And I think the Schedule 80 will fit in there as well. It's a little thicker, but it's still under 2 inches, and makes all the difference in the world. I've actually built amazingly large structures with 1.5 inches, in this case galvanized pipe, or black pipe, both. If you have that in speed rail clamps, it's like the ultimate Lincoln Logs or Erector set. You can build stuff 20 feet tall, no problem, with just Allen wrench. It's 5/32 Allen wrench and and these toys. It's amazing. Your comments, Jim?
No, that's about right. My handbook's not here, but I think it'd be less than 2 inches with Schedule 80. On 1.5 inch plumbing pipe. So that'll work fine.
Okay, anybody else have comments for the topic?
NB2F checking in.
I got you, D. Will you have questions or comments for the net?
Nothing at this time.
Thank you, sir. Alrighty, we've added you to the roster. Alrighty. Noel, did I answer all your questions?
CX6CAH disconnected. CX6CAH disconnected. Connected. W2TTTNB2F disconnected.
Really? Well, I know I'm there. Never saw these other stations, but okay. Very fine. Alrighty, N2OEL, K2BAR.
Yes, I is here.
Okay, so my question to you was, did that answer your question?
Yes, I would have fun when we get to assemble it. What's amazing, of course, is the 5 foot of pipe that supports the rotator and the antenna from the structure on the roof is heavier than the 26-pound. Oh, by the way, the support structure underneath is, when we built the, we did the roof and we did the siding in 1999, the wife threatened me with various things. If I put a hole through her roof, she didn't want any leaks. So we went to the Home Depot and they have these things that are vent pipes. So I bought the heaviest galvanized so-called vent pipe, 5 foot long. One end was threaded. It went into one of those big flanges. I bought 3 of them, one just on 3 foot from one end, one from 3 foot to the other, one in the center. And we have to find these huge metal clamps. So we clamped the beams, the slanted beams in the roof. And then on the floor, the building contractor that I had, I think he put 3 2x12 on the side and put a slot in them so we can get the cables through. And we put an electrical cover on the top so we can run, I think we can run up to 3 pieces of coax at one time through one of these pipes. That's just about how much clearance we have inside. So it's reasonably sturdy. And we got about 18 inches sticking out of the roof with that black neoprene and aluminum seal so that I do not put a hole through the roof and have to suffer the wrath of the XYL. And we had various antennas up there. The contractor said, how strong do you want me to make it? And I said, well, how about if I get up there and swing on it? I don't want it to move. And that's what he did. Back to net, and to William.
Oh, okay, that's interesting. Well, you know, I don't know if you're aware, but I have a 3.5 inch mast right up through my roof, sits in the shack here. And right now there's no antennas on it, but it is mounted on a thrust bearing. I pulled the rotator out of the floor. Basically, my desk is L-shaped, so it's in the far corner of my desk. And the rotator sits on the floor. And it works out really, really well. It's a kind of an amazing little structure. But I built that a few years ago, and rather proud of myself, as I'm sure you can imagine. Nice having a big, fat, stout mast, and somewhat like you did when they were building the second or third floor of my house. I had double bracketing built into the corners. I had these storied shelves made about a foot and a half square in the corner, one just below the ceiling line, another one just below the desk line, and works out really, really well. And when I built the L-shaped desk into the office here, it's in that corner you can't get to anyway. So I can actually look at the mast and actually look at the hash marks on the mast and know which way the antennas are pointing on that mast as well. So it's good for heavy things where my relatively flat roof allows me access to mount things. So it's pretty robust. I haven't tried the 6-foot dish yet, but that'd be something else I'd really like to try at some point. I do have to have some modest weight to provide tilting on it because I want to be able to bird bath the dish for obvious reasons. 8-foot is probably too big, but if I bird bath the dish, meaning pointing up, it'll keep it from being a heavy wind load and give me some options. So we'll see. Alrighty, any more on this topic? Hey, Noel, just wanted curiosity, is this 6-meter beam that you've made the one that you put on that little TV FM rotator that has the built-in TV antenna, an FM antenna with it?
No, we do not have a 6-meter beam. We have a 6-meter vertical dipole that weighs about 15 pounds. It has what appears to be about a 2.5-inch diameter brass tube. It's quarter of a meter long. Then out of the top, it has a beautiful ceramic center insulator. You run your coax up the center of the 3/4-inch black steel pipe and connect it to the PL259 connector there, SO239 actually. And out of the top of it comes a piece of aluminum that's about 1.25 meters long. Maybe 1.5 meters long. Yeah, 1.5 meters long. Each side is 1.5 meters. And it's 3/4-inch aluminum. And it was made up by somebody, I think it's KRECO, who kindly sent me the instructions how to put it together. I bought it at the Hamfest for $10. I think the best $10 I ever spent. So I was looking to have a 6-meter vertical up there, too. And to OEM.
Okay, so this is not that... That crazy little rotator you had with the, that came with the antenna. All right, very good. That's excellent. All righty. Next topic is a question or a comment from NS2K, K2BAR.
NS2K. Yeah, well, actually, the first thing that came to mind here was my idea of doing QRP is to bring my little Drake 75. But beyond that, now I've been playing here with the Flex, and so well we've had very, very much better success than we saw Tuesday, where it was very snotty and crashed a lot. Since I added another update to the boot tool, it has not crashed since, although it did behave kind of strangely the first time or two, but it's been very, very nice ever since. And it is pretty nice. Anyway, now I've got to try to remember everything that I was supposed to bring to field day and hope very much for decent weather. We're looking forward to that. NS2K.
Okay, first things first, when did you get a Flex, and which one did you get?
Pretty well tricked out, 5.
Okay, a 5, and when did you get it?
I've had it for a couple of weeks now, and we've been trying the last few days to make the thing actually sort of work. And, of course, being a total glutton for punishment, I'm using Boot Camp on the Macintosh. Which in itself has, you know, given us some other interesting issues.
Yeah, I'm sure. Okay. I'm still waiting for mine. But I received confirmation the other day that all the pieces are going to be in one place soon, kitted up and then sent to me. I'm really kind of cranky. This was supposed to happen almost 2 months ago. The other thing I'm cranky about is that somehow or another, none of them were ordered with the VHF-UHF adapter. I was, like, furious. I flipped. So, I'm some quick utility and convince my own boss to buy me one. I'll return theirs to them. I'm just torqued. But anyway, that's a whole other thing. But anyway. All right, very good. Any other questions for Jim about the Flex? Alrighty, K2ZO, your comments, sir, K2BAR.
Okay, K2BAR, this is K2ZO. I just wanted to comment on, you know, we discussed that antenna that I built the other day for W2ML, which was the shortened 40-meter dipole. Let it drop. And I had built a kind of a custom-made ballon. We wanted to have a light antenna, and in doing a little bit of research with my Dremel tool and cutting apart a W2DU ballon, I observed how it was constructed. It was very interesting. For everybody's information, that is a current ballon. It's made of a piece of coax with a bunch of ferrite beads on it. The way they did it, they took a piece of coax that's good for quite a bit of RF, good for a kilowatt, even though it's very small in diameter. It's only like a quarter of an inch in diameter, about probably be more like 3/16. And what they do is inside that plastic housing, they string it with a whole bunch of ferrite beads, about 30 of them, small ones, that are big enough to allow that coax to go through. So they've got a hole about 3/16 diameter, and they made a number 43 material. What I did was, in order to make that antenna and put a ballon on it, a current type ballon is really what you want for a regular dipole like that, which just chokes off the RF. What I did is when I made the center connector, I attached to it about a 2 foot piece of RG303. RG303 is small diameter Teflon type coax, about 3/16 of an inch diameter, but yet it's good for a kilowatt. And I put about 25 or 30 beads on it and just secured them with a tie wrap so they won't rattle around on there. So they're out in the open, but don't need to be sealed up, and they're very, very light. And basically, I was able to duplicate an expensive ballon. There's a number of other products that are built similar to that, like RF isolators and stuff like that. So it's nothing more than a piece of thin coax strung with the ferrite beads. The secret is that thin coax can take a lot of RF. As much as a piece of big, thin, fat RG8. And I was able to make a very nice, lightweight ballon that he could use with that antenna and take it portable. Back to that. It's K2ZO.
Okay, very good. And did you put the same 30-odd beads in yours?
Yes, I have another one, and I just recently found another source and bought some more ferrite beads. And also bought, some RG303. So, yes, a very effective way of making a ballon that's good for a kilowatt. And, for $5, you could build one that you'd have to pay $35 for.
Very nice. Very nice, yeah. That's really good. Anybody have any comments or questions for Jim about this? All right, so I have one, Jim. The type 43 ferrite, how does it work on 160 and 80 meters?
Works fine on 160 and 80. It actually will work pretty good on VHF, but it has a little bit higher permeability. But unfortunately, I have not been able to find the ferrite beads that are have got a diameter of about 3/16 of an inch in any other material than the 43 and I guess the 72, which might be a little bit better, but it's hard to find that stuff.
Yes, I'm well aware. I was looking for some, T-72 material. Boy, that is a nuisance. I was looking for it because of interference cases with DSL, where hams were co-located with a DSL user and were taking out the DSL big time.
Yeah, they make good filters, and all you do is just string them along the coax. Some of these line isolators that are sold by various different companies use the same thing. It's just stuck in a piece of pipe. And to get away from the expensive large ferrites, which have a half-inch diameter in them that go on a piece of RG-8, now you'd have to have a thing that was 6 feet long. And you could do the same thing in terms of RF choking it off with a much shorter length of RG-303 and the smaller beads. And the whole secret is the RG-303 will take a kilowatt.
That's very, you know, good that it does. And, you know, the joys of Teflon coax. Real small diameter and whole lot of power capability. But anyway, anybody else have anything on the subject? Alrighty. Now let's see our next question topic. Let's see, make sure I didn't miss anybody. Wesley, your question or comment about circulator efficiency and as a function of frequency and, you know, the design. Why don't you restate your question for us, K2BAR?
Hey, this is N2HCN. Circulators and insulators, or isolators, are very much common devices as the circulator contains isolator. So let's say the 3-port device relies on the fact that because of the ferromagnet coupling inside, the RF energy is diverted into the direction from, let's say, port 1 to port 2, but not into port 3. However, if you swap the connection over, that would be a great resistance to signal flowing in the opposite direction from 2 to 1. And questions. Magnetic and ferrite components inside and role it serves. Question number 2. Frequency range and frequency dependency. Question number 3. Why it is not applicable to certain frequencies? And with your permission, I will have a few more questions in another subject.
To the first one, for sure, you're welcome to. No problem. Well, I guess, you know, you can design a circulator or an isolator for, you know, any number of frequency ranges. I'm trying to remember what the best way to design these things are, but, you know, I think the biggest problem you have is size. It's just plain physical size makes for the whole thing to be a bit of a challenge. So the trick is you need to if you create a transmission line that is essentially, you know, oblivious to the RF in one direction. There's actually I don't have my handbook here. There's actually a really good diagram in older handbooks. I don't know if it's in the current handbook. but there's a way to, they actually have a picture of a coaxial line isolator, which is really what could be done. So, you know, the physical size is the biggest problem. I'm madly looking here. You know, they're closely related to the characteristics of a directional coupler as well, but I have seen them done in coax, but, you know, they are a bit chunky. I'm trying to remember. Anybody here play with this stuff before? Okay. So, let me just read something here that is somewhat relevant. They're three-port devices, and, you know, basically, you have 120 degrees of phase shift, you know, between ports, and one of the ports has to be terminated in the characteristic impedance, otherwise you'll have a problem. You know, the ferrites can help you get into, you know, should we say, provide you with a certain amount of electrical resonance. But boy, you know, I know it's got, well, I don't know. I'm struggling here because I don't have any diagrams in front of me, and I wish I did. But basically, the idea, as you know, Wesley, is to provide a high degree of isolation between two of the ports. That's the game you play, and you know it allows. You know, they're also. I remember. I wonder if I saw it in the FM repeater book. You know, the old AWR FM repeater book. But anyway, you know what? There's amazingly enough a decent write-up on circulators. It's a little, but the essentials are there in oddly enough Wikipedia that aren't bad. The example they show is waveguide, you know. I'm trying to remember. I know, you know, there's some explanations as to where you'd use it. They're talking about radar systems, so you could isolate the receiver from the transmitter and things like that, but use the same antenna. But, you know, how I'm not seeing any good design stuff here. I'm seeing some papers on one for UHF, strip line one for UHF. I'm trying to remember. K2ZO, do you remember, you know, what's the, I know the phase difference among the ports is 120 degrees, but I'm trying to remember, you know, what the scoop is with that. How do you keep the adjacent ones, you know, what happens 240 degrees out that magically, you know, when it comes to the last 120 back to the first port, you won't get any RF back down. How do you keep RF, how do you keep RF 240 degrees offset from where you are from going down the other port? How does that work? No, he's hiding. Okay. I would start with the references that are in Wikipedia. That might be a good point, Wesley, and go from there. There are some references on the base. The write-up is pretty minimal, but the references are pretty good, actually.
Okay. Do you have it?
Yours?
Hey, this is interesting. Well, I believe there is, due to the strong magnetic field placed across the disk, such as the RF energy flowing into the strip lines has to enhance imposed biasing magnetic field, that how that is how the directivity is generated. The nature of the question was not really that I do not understand how it works. The nature of the question that we deal with the circulator in the ambient temperature. We don't deal with plasma. Therefore, we don't deal with the electrons. And photons do not have a mass. Question. How in the world it is possible that a magnet from one side and a ferrite from the other side are able to bend the path of the electromagnetic wave to the point which we know that electromagnetic wave cannot be bent, that it goes to the right port and to XGM?
Well, you're asking the same question I was asking Jim. How does something 120, or in this case 240 degrees out of phase, end up with no energy? I mean, one would think intuitively that the magic number is 180 degrees to cancel in the reverse direction, but in point of fact, it's not. So, you know, what's going on? And the answer is, I don't know. You know what, though? You and I may race to ask Dick on that question on Sunday night.
What do you want to do?
Simpler questions. Square wave shape impulse is of DC nature, and so in other words, is the square wave impulse built out of the singular sine waves to form square waves? Back to you.
Oh, very much the latter. It's a harmonically rich, if you will, set of sinusoids that work to provide us a close approximation to a square wave as possible. Absolutely. I think we might have a question from, or an answer from Bill. W1AU W2TTT K2BAR.
K2BAR W1AU. I was hesitating in coming in because, frankly, I'm going to say that circulators are based on magic and they contain large amounts of unobtainium. But one thing I can say for sure is that you're using the degree symbol incorrectly. 120 degrees is the physical distance. I was taught that circulators should be thought of very much like magnetrons, where the energy enters the ferrite, I'm assuming a ferrite or some structure like that, and then it's doing its thing inside, however that's done, it's using magic wands or whatever, and then comes out from rotation. It is internally using phase, and we calculated with S parameters to pop it out, the physical 120 degrees, but it's not 120 degree phase difference, like an antenna or a piece of coax or something like that. W1AU.
Okay, well that makes me think it's a bit better. So, you know, is it a little like a directional coupler, whereby energy can go in one direction, because you've got essentially switching diodes in full effect in one direction, and then in the other direction basically provides a high impedance path, and therefore, you know, that doesn't allow a signal to go the other direction. Is that really what we're talking about here?
My understanding is that they're related. They're very near cousins, but it's not the diodes that are doing the work. It's a closer relationship to a magnetron, where you're it's putting energy in, and it's doing things, the little things that are in very small orbits running around each other. But exactly how that happens is like exactly how cornflakes are made to me. I know it takes some kind of magic to make it happen.
Do I see it?
Go ahead, and I got a comment on the I got a comment from one station by email. Thank you. Go ahead, Wesley.
Well, this is the change in the magnetic field will change the permeability of the ferrite that encloses the coupling strip sweep lines and alter the performance. That I understand perfectly. I don't have a problem with how the circulator works. The problem that I have with it is the theory that stands behind it. I was told, photon does not have a mass, electron does have a mass. Well, we have a larger coupling lines of ferrite discs. We have a magnet from the other side. And then we have an ambient temperature through which we have a string of energy that is flowing. And based on the physical diameter of it, let me put it this way. Why do we use the word circulator, or why we use the word attenuator or isolator, I'm sorry. If we could use a word, I have it, slotting light line. I have one that is 55 inches long one. Which actually the diameter, the length of the slotting line, there is nothing in it, is able to react with the radio wave. It's a mechanical device, no diodes, nothing in it. All you have is just three connectors, and then you have a slicer. So, the way that, let me jump, because I don't know if there is a timer in here on this repeater. So, basically what is happening is that you have a certain wavelength. The circulator is made for a particular set of frequency, or range of frequency, and it will not go beyond that. So, yes, the electromagnetic wave is delivered. We have a port that is terminated. Other than that, we will have a problem, and yes, it is positioned usually 120 degrees in rotation apart. So we're talking about a physical rotation, a physical geometrical diameter of 100 degrees. But the problem that I have is if the theory of the fact that the electromagnetic wave is the energy with no mass, then we cannot bend it. This is interaction.
I think that what we're talking about is something akin to what Bill was discussing before, and that is that the magnetic field that's set up alters the permeability, which is like what you said, and therefore makes it appear in one direction as a low impedance, or should we say a matching impedance, you know, and therefore permissive of the energy to leave the circulator loop, and whatever comes back down will not come back down the other, from that will not come down at the other port, because it's set up a high impedance situation because of the energizing, thank you, that the rented lips, because the energy going through the ferrite setting up the magnetic field caused impedance in the other direction. That's basically my take on it. Bill, is that in very crude terms what you were trying to communicate?
W1AU, I'm going to hesitate and say no, really. I'm going to make a model up, and remember, I'm not saying I'm an expert in this. I'm not saying I know this. But think of it this way. If you think of the model of a magnetron, and think instead of thinking of ferrite like we do and slapping on the side of the piece of coax, or maybe even if you do that, ferrites get hot. Why do they get hot? They get energy into them. Now, if we can orient the molecules within the ferrite, that's what the magnet's for, then their spin is going to be uniform, and that's the thing that causes it to push the physical 120 degrees. The energy goes into the ferrite spins it to the next molecule, which spins it out, falls out 120 degrees, the stuff coming back down the line does the same thing, but instead of going counterclockwise, they go clockwise, and then fall out to the either a dummy load or another receiver or whatever else. They were developed again at the time that you were trying to look for radar things, and at the same more or less time as masers. So if you kind of think of them as a solid-state laser device, but it's operating at much lower frequencies. HBAR W1AU.
Okay, that's better. Clearly more comprehensible. I'm just trying to think where else I can find some write-ups I can share. Searching madly here. Anybody else have anything to add on this?
Your permission, I have two other questions.
Okay, I found something that explains some of this. If you Google RF circulator design, the ANSOFT site, www.ansoft.com, HF Workshop 3, and there's more to it, but if someone wants it, I can send them the link to the PDF, but you should be able to find, if you just Google RF circulator design, look for the reference to the ANSOFT site. It's on the second tab. It's not the second choice, but it's on like choice list number 2. And I think that'll help you with what you're looking for. It's a temperature stable design of microcirculators using, HFSS and Maxwell. So it talks about the magnetostatic modeling using Maxwell and a few other things. So this will give you at least a little bit of sense for what this is about and improve your understanding. It won't make it perfect, but it'll certainly help a lot. And anyway, not enough said on that for now. It's been 1,000 years since I looked about anything related to Maxwell, for God's sake. Anyway, so Wesley, go ahead.
And direction. Lightning. If lightning is on DC nature, which should be electrostatically talking, why do we hear a set of frequency on the ham radio band when the lightning occurs? And a question. Component of the right time of an impulse are the products containing all of the frequencies of the lightning, or speed of rising and falling of an impulse is the reason of creating various numbers of frequencies of lightning? And to XM.
Wow, the chicken and egg question. All right, so the answer to your first question is easier. Lightning contains both DC and AC components, period. Let's get us out a conversation going about that, then we can go to your chicken and egg question. So, anybody have any thoughts on this?
W1AU, 48.
Exactly. Go ahead, they'll expand.
Is that a pun? Yeah. 4A is a simple form of mathematics which says that any AC thing can be represented by a series of frequencies added together in some way or another. lightning is truly DC only. That's a little weird.